all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Tuesday, February 28th. Coming up this hour, rural Wisconsin and Tony Evers' budget proposal. There's a lot in there for Wisconsin's rural economy. There are direct investments in roads, bridges, broadbands, schools. But there's also targeted help for farm exports, modernizing dairy processing plants, helping food pantries to stay stocked with fresh Wisconsin-grown products. We will talk to Lincoln County farmer Hans Breitenmoser a little later on this hour about that. We will check in with weatherology meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki, and in our Civic Media homeroom, we'll have Chad Holmes of Bull Falls Radio. As always, you can reach us at 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. The spring general election is 5 weeks from today, so we thought we would use the occasion to play back some excerpts from our recent interview with Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz. We also reached out to the campaign of conservative former Justice Dan Kelly, but have not received a response. So if you missed it the first time around, in this excerpt, we asked Judge Protasiewicz to talk about why she chose to run, what the big issues in this race are all about, and why she thinks she's the better choice on April 4th. But we started by asking her about her personal biography.
I was born and raised on the south side of Milwaukee to teachers, really hardworking parents. And, you know, they instilled in me a number of things. You're going to work really hard, you're going to study hard, and you're going to give back to your community. And that's just what I've done. I worked my way through undergrad. I worked while I was in law school. I wasn't able to work my way through law school, meaning I did have debts when I left law school. But what I really wanted to do was continue to give back to the community and work with people. So when I graduated from Marquette Law School, I was very honored to be appointed an assistant district attorney in Milwaukee County. And I worked there for a quarter of a century, handling really complicated, you know, criminal litigation issues across the board. Worked at Children's Court. Milwaukee County has a Children's Court separate from a downtown division where we work with children who are, you know, abused or neglected that need services. Children who are in homes that aren't appropriate for them. We're working very, very hard to get them permanency, to have them adopted by, you know, fit, loving, adoptive parents. And so, you know, I had Children's Court work, worked hard protecting victims, worked hard protecting our community for those 25 years, and then I decided to run for judge in Milwaukee County and been honored to have that position since 2014.
What, in your case, what made you say, okay, I'm ready to move from this position with individuals I'm helping or guiding or sentencing all the time to something more like a state Supreme Court?
Well, I'm honored and I love the position that I currently hold. So I want to start out with that. But I would say this. The stakes are absolutely so high in this race. I started thinking about this race last April. And it is not a cliche when I say I got into this race to save democracy for our state. I mean it. Everything that we care about is on the line, and everything that we care about is likely going to come into our Supreme Court chamber. And, you know, I have to be careful with how I structure responses, given that I'm running for a judicial post. But I tell people about my values. And values in regard to our gerrymandering and our maps issue. And I say that everybody deserves to be represented and represented in a fair way and where their votes are meaningful. And, you know, Wisconsin's a battleground state. And you look at the state of Wisconsin and you look at how close these statewide races are. And then you look at our maps and you have to recognize that something is wrong and that our Supreme Court allowed that, as compared to the dissent, you know, in the gerrymandering case, which I would say that I would agree with. Women's right to choose. I can tell you that, you know, that 1849 near total ban on abortion is going to stand if one of the far right extreme opponents wins this race. I think it's likely that even the results of the 2024 presidential election are going to come into the Supreme Court chamber, just like the results of the 2020 election did. So I think that the stakes are just so incredibly high, and that's why I decided to run.
Final question is about the general election campaign. Again, we've already seen the national attention that is going to come to this race. What concerns do you have about what that campaign is going to get to be like with national attention if you are a part of it?
I don't know that I would have concerns. My biggest concerns about these races always have to do with outside money coming in. And we know that our United States Supreme Court allowed that in Citizens United. So we have a situation where, you know, I think potentially substantial amounts of money. We already know $6 million has been spent on this race so far, and we're 10 days outside of the primary. So I don't think the national attention is a bad thing. I think that's a good thing for the state of Wisconsin, and it certainly magnifies and has a light on, you know, all of these important issues. It's the spending, I think, is certainly an issue. We're hearing, you know, one group has pledged anywhere between $10 and $30 million to Dan Kelly in this race. It's shocking amounts of money.
It really is. Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz, thank you so much for talking about your candidacy for state Supreme Court. We really appreciate the visit. And again, that was Judge Janet Protasiewicz talking. This was a couple of weeks ago as we were heading up into the primary election. And again, we did reach out to the conservative candidates, Waukesha County Judge Jennifer Doro, and then former Justice Dan Kelly, who ultimately prevailed in the primary. And he and Judge Protasiewicz will face off on April 4th in a race that will determine control of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, something that conservatives have controlled for 15 years now. We'll get an update from meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki coming up next. You're up north. Yeah, it's not your typical bumper music. I grant you that, but I put it up there because we've got a lot of birthdays today. that's the short answer. We usually at 6:50 we talk about this day in history. We take a little music break. We tell you some birthdays. There's so many of them that we thought we'd spill them over a bit here. Claire Dumphy, actress Julie Bowen, is 53 years old today. Actress Jessica Biel is 41, and then there's Herschel Walker, the one-time football great turned political not very great at all, is 61 years old today. And on the topic of Republicans behaving badly, I was going to talk a bit about CPAC. Later, Kieva Keel is going to talk about the Dominion lawsuit that has really exposed people to Fox News. Stephen from Green Bay is calling in as well on that very subject of Fox quote-unquote news. Stephen, good morning.
Good morning. I usually don't get to listen to your show because I'm usually in bed snoring. So,
well, thank goodness for your insomnia. Do you have something special today?
I actually got scheduled to work a double at work today, so that's why I'm awake.
What do you do?
I'm actually a cook at a hospital.
Oh, bless you. Okay, how long have you been doing that?
Just a little over a year.
Okay, do you enjoy it?
I do. I get the opportunity to serve my community, and I've always wanted to do that, so I like doing that.
That's great. I appreciate that very much. So, Stephen, what's on your mind regarding Fox and the Dominion lawsuit that's kind of exposing what their business model has been like?
So I heard about the lawsuit. I know Fox News isn't covering it because they censor the news. But I brought this up the other day on the Earl Ingham show, and I think I just repeat what I said on there. Sure. To you. I really feel like Fox is trying to set up a narrative. If any other news outlet reports something or you know, disagrees with what they have to say or their point of view, it's fake news. I really feel like they're trying to set up a narrative where they're the only news source and get people brainwashed into thinking they're the only real news outlet. And when you have a news company that's trying to do that, and then it comes out that they're doing that for ratings and for profit, it really becomes dangerous because then you have people that are tuned in on one station getting all of their information, and that information is highly, highly politicized to the right. It's not correct half the time. And some of the time, it's just a bold-faced lie. So I think it's really dangerous, and I really hope that, you know, something, not just money, but I really hope something comes out of this where Fox News is forced to be a news station or remove that from their title, because right now they're more of an entertainment channel than a news channel.
Very much so, Stephen. It's why they actually aren't on in places like Canada. You know, they have actual standards for what constitutes news. And one of the best things that could come of this whole thing isn't, I mean, a financial judgment would be great, but just increased public awareness that, you know, this is not a news network. It is a propaganda network. But Stephen, I want to bounce something off you. It's something that I've wrestled with whenever people talk about this and whether anything will change. Some people very close to me who have become basically Fox News watchers, when I talked to them and said, look, you know me, I'm a journalist. I can tell you what's right and what's wrong, and I try to set them straight on something. The answer that I get back sometimes, and it really kind of hits me, you know, like a fist in the chest, is, well, maybe they all lie, but this is what I want to believe is true. And that's my concern, Stephen, is that even after all this is done, when it's proven, it has been proven that Fox lies about things like this, as long as enough of their audience wants to believe it's true, they're still going to do it. And that to me is like the great American puzzle that I can't figure out right now. I don't know if you feel the same or if you have any words of wisdom to help me feel better.
Well, here's my thoughts on that. I'll be honest with you. I used to be a Fox News. Heck, I used to be a conservative until the conservative movement went so far right and went off the rails. I was like, I can't possibly in good conscience be part of this anymore. Mm-hmm. But as far as, you know, your comment on people saying, you know, that's what they want to believe, I know how that goes. I grew up with grandparents who were very rural, very Republican. And, you know, you could tell them, you know, the Republicans were going to take their firstborn baby, and they would, you know, they'd be like, you're lying. The Republicans would never do that to me. I think, unfortunately, and this is just my perspective on the issue, the first thing we need to do is, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. So we definitely need to be out there, you know, voicing the right thing. But beyond that, I really think the older generation that has been Republicans their whole life, I don't think they're going to, you know, all of a sudden be like, oh, my gosh. Because then they would have to admit that their whole life that they have been following something that, you know, isn't correct. And for a lot of people, that's a scary thought. But we do have a new generation that's coming into the picture. And I really think it's important to educate that new generation and make sure that this doesn't continue.
You're so right on every one of these points, Stephen. And it is actually, despite my question sounding depressing, it actually is where I hang my hat, is looking at younger generations coming up right now, not just teens and 20s, but even people in their 20s, 30s. They have given me a lot more hope for a future that recognizes how far off the rails things have gone on the, you know, conservative side of the aisle, which, again, to your point, and a point I've made frequently, I have Republican friends. I have conservative friends. They're great people. There's times I agree with them. There's times they agree with me. We all recognize just how far away from the mainstream some of these folks have gone. And thankfully, more young people are catching that all the time. So I appreciate the discussion about it, Stephen. And again, thanks for all you do. And thanks for calling in.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
All right. Have a great weekend. Appreciate that very much from Stephen. And if you'd like to jump on as well, again, our numbers are 844-967-2789, or the Up North line is 715-388-7155. It is part of, as well, the conflict of this particular program is that when people hear some of the things that I, you know, say about conservative politicians, about right-wing politicians, about right-wing media, and they think that this is a program that's going to be very, you know, bombastic and almost bullying toward the right, when it's really not that so much as it is that somebody finally has to stand up to some of these folks, you know, who are so extreme, who are engaged in rhetoric that winks or encourages violence and just does tell flat out lies, and somebody's got to call them out on it. And there's always the, when you're discussing, you know, how do you quote unquote deprogram people who have been, you know, locked into right-wing media without pushing them away, without, you know, because they're going to say, wait, are you calling me stupid? And, you know, have that kind of reflex response. And that is the challenge, is to call out the BS that's out there, but do it in a way that the anger falls on the people who are concocting the BS and not the people who are watching it and happen to believe it, because those are friends and neighbors who can still see the more factual point of view, shall we say. And that's a lot of what we want to do here at Civic Media. It's what we do at Courier Newsroom and Up North News, is, with my apologies for those of you who have heard this once, twice, or 10 times before, you can absolutely have a slightly right-of-center newsroom, a slightly right-of-center talk show. Just don't lie to people. Don't make up stuff like what we're hearing at CPAC this week. Much like you can have, you know, this left-of-center radio group or group of newsrooms or news outlets. And all left of center means, or right of center in this case, is your values. And if you go to the Up North News website, upnorthnewswi.com, and you click on About Us, it's a very lengthy page, but it is a page of the values that we who work at Up North News espouse and that we don't hide from. And as a result, you know, when you see us covering a news story, you will understand better why what we're doing, you know, writes the way that it does or sounds the way that it does. We make very clear we're not going to engage in both sides coverage, which so much of, you know, legacy media does these days. They speculate endlessly on, you know, is Joe Biden this or that, simply because they feel like they have to promote this both sides narrative, and you don't have to. And we put up values that say, I'll read one right off the page here. Everyone should have a right to freely and easily cast a vote. And it only stands to benefit our communities when as many people are engaged in the civic process as possible, whether that's making their voice heard at a school board meeting or casting a ballot on election day. That is absolutely, are we biased here? Yeah, we are so biased for free elections. We are biased for democracy, and we are not going to both side something like, you know, Dan Kelly working as a paid consultant to the Republican Party as they were contemplating putting up a slate of fake fraudulent electors as part of Donald Trump's scheme to overturn the election. There's no way to both sides that. So he's not going to get the benefit of the doubt because there isn't one to offer. That doesn't mean that Dan Kelly, in this particular instance, can't be right about other things. But our value is that elections should be free and fair. And so if he, while running for state Supreme Court right now, has engaged in action that runs afoul of that value, we're going to talk about it. And we mentioned as well, you know, access to healthcare and affordable housing and labor unions and the climate. All of these things, you look at them and you can say, then once you look at that page, you can say, okay, I don't agree with them on this point or that point, but at least you know where we're coming from, and you can keep that in mind as you listen to the rest of our coverage. I'd love to see more of that from media on the right side of things, because then I know that they're not going to, well, lie about things like, you know, the COVID vaccine is, and then insert misinformation there. You can disagree with compulsory vaccination programs and all sorts of other things, but don't lie about the science behind something like this. And again, you know, the time I was going to spend in this segment talking about the CPAC conference and the honestly mean and nutty things that people were saying, I think that time was better spent with one of our listeners talking about where they come from and how people who might still be entranced by the rhetoric of CPAC can be pulled back from the factual abyss, I guess we could call it. All right, we're going to take a break. And after this, Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil is going to have more to say about the Dominion lawsuit on Fox and also a couple of other matters. We'll start with some good news about the news this week, things that were good for bipartisan infrastructure, things that were good for insulin prices. We recorded this earlier, of course, because he's in California, but we're going to play that back in just a bit on Up North News Radio for a Friday.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
I want to talk to the ladies tonight. About the situation I'm pretty sure y'all would be able to relate to. Trust me. What's that? Today I'm not feeling pretty.
So I was talking to Dr. Lyerly last night about this segment about the period tax, and we're always looking for, you know, bumper music that kind of sets the stage, and I was a little surprised at the amount of music that has been written about subjects of which I know absolutely nothing. And so I ran some of them by Kristen, and we decided to go with Mary J. Blige, who has a song called PMS. There was Dolly Parton with the PMS Blues, neither of which are directly related to what we're talking about, but tangentially enough that we're on there. So Kristen, thanks for not just being an educated OBGYN, but my music consultant for a segment like Hometown Health this week.
And thank you for weeding through all of the information that's out there and all of the music, because much of it is not radio friendly.
Would not play it in a million years. No, you would play it amongst friends and you'd laugh. You would not play it on the radio.
Kind of like talking about women's health issues, Pat.
Yes. And again, I have to be mindful sometimes that being married to an OBGYN myself, sometimes I'm overly comfortable bringing up a subject and then I'll get the looks from people and they'll be like, oh, wait, I'm too inside baseball on this. But these are important topics. And I'm going to start first by offering a partial apology before we even introduce our guest, Suzanne Herman from Period Law. Kristen had made clear that this segment was going to be about the period tax. The first thing as I started looking up for it, I realized there's also something called the pink tax, which is basically the same product marketed toward women, has a tendency to cost more, usually if something is colored pink, like a razor or something like that. That's not specifically what you want to get into, but again, there's a bit of a relationship there in that, as I've said to my wife and daughters a million times, it's really hard being a girl. Mm-hmm. You're good on you. I wouldn't trade with you for a minute. So having offered all of that up, why don't you introduce our topic and our guest this week?
Well, as Pat said, we are going to be talking about the period tax. And I'm so excited to introduce our guest, Suzanne Herman, who is the legal director for Period Law. Welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
And thank you for that differentiation between the pink tax and the period tax. That's super appreciated as well.
Yeah, and it all kind of comes down to one thing, which is really discrimination against women. I mean, let's be honest. And it's so subtle that we often don't think about it. So let's just launch right into it. What is period law?
Yeah, absolutely. So we like to call ourselves the lawyers for the menstrual movement, which is a wonderful sentence, but like, what does that really mean? Our goal is to fight for tax-free, toxin-free menstrual products that are freely available to anyone who needs them. So we work with volunteer attorneys from around the country to advance state and federal period policy. We provide legal research and support to people in states across the country. We work with a national advocacy organization that's called period.org, all caps, period.org. I encourage you to look them up. Right now, we actually have a partnership, which we're really excited about, with CVS Health. And in the past, throughout, you know, our work, we've sued states where we needed to. We've launched class action lawsuits that attempt to end the tampon tax, another of these like euphemistic terms about taxes that fall on women, which I can talk about more, but to end the tampon tax in New York, and we sued in Michigan And both of those lawsuits resulted in legislative appeal of the tax. So we're
Yeah, I want to talk about the tampon tax. Let's talk about it because this is a really important point. So yeah, hit us up. Tell us about the tampon tax.
Absolutely. So it's basically a term that refers to the fact that tampons, panty liners, menstrual cups, all menstrual products under the sun are subject to a retail sales tax in right now 22 states remain. Back in 2018, it was 40 states. So like this is a moving target, but about 22 states now. And that doesn't sound like such a big deal, or it doesn't like immediately grab your attention, unless you think about the fact that the way sales tax are supposed to work in our country is that you exempt necessities. So food, clothing, prescription drugs in Wisconsin are all exempt from sales tax, but menstrual products are not considered a necessity in this way. That gets really upsetting to think about when you think that things like medicated condoms, Viagra, which has no approved uses for women, but is a prescription drug, are exempt.
I'm sorry. they're not listed as necessary or essential?
Exactly. And they are medical products. The FDA classifies them as, depending on if you're talking about tampons or pads, class one or class two medical devices. Actually, the CARES Act said that menstrual products are medical necessities because they made them so under your HSA or FSA spending plans. So we have the institutional knowledge that these are medical necessities, but for many reasons, I have a lot of theories about why it has not been changed in the tax code in this really common sense way just to make them sales tax exempt. And that has a lot of implications.
I have to ask out loud, you guys don't have the answer, but from my being in the legislature 15 years ago, I'm like, why didn't we do anything about that? And I don't recall it coming up, which is not to say it didn't, but.
Oh, I know.
Okay, tell me more.
Well, how many women are in the legislature?
Exactly.
This doesn't mean this is, I mean, maybe for somebody like you who's married to an OBGYN and have two daughters,
it would have been a no-brainer for me. Yeah, absolutely.
I think most men, especially men who are making these rules, this is not a priority for them.
Well,
or
that it was, again, people did not feel comfortable coming up into my office and saying, hey, Senator Kreitlow, there's this proposal, which, again, I think I would have signed on in a heartbeat, have, you know, again, with the OB wife and the two daughters and everything else. But again, there was a comfort level. So for those folks who are like, why are you talking about this on the radio? This is exactly why these things have to be talked about.
That's so well said. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You have to have a bill that says that you're going to create a new tax exemption. So it can't just get done without some push. But there have been many pushes for many other lesser necessary devices. A lot of corporate interests sometimes push for their products to become tax exempt. But you need to be able to talk about menstruation, and you need to be able to talk to people who understand what menstruation is in order to get this like common sense thing added to the list.
And this is a state by state effort. So in some states like Wisconsin, these items are taxed, but in other states like New York, they're not taxed. So can you talk a little bit about the state by state efforts and what you've seen as you've been making your way across the country and making this really important change for women?
Absolutely. That's a great question. It is such an interesting like legal challenge because we have to go state by state, and it really lets you see the intricacies of different states and how they talk about women's health. But so right now we're actually having huge success in Texas. Texas currently taxes menstrual products, but we're really optimistic that this is the year that's going to change, which is like thrilling for other southern states and just like a sign of the times. As I mentioned, in 2016, since 2016, rather, there's been 18 states that have taken care of this. So whether that's by putting it in their budget, passing a bill, feeling the threat of a lawsuit, and then having the governor decide that maybe this is actually a priority, it's really different in each place. And it tells you a lot about the way that our comfort level with this is changing. There's been a lot more news coverage, a lot more like pop culture celebrity attention to things like the pink tax or the tampon tax. Also, we like to say right now that it's one of the most civil ways that we can talk in our country about reproductive health because it's such a polarizing topic in the moment. But needing tampons and menstrual products, thinking of them as medical necessities that shouldn't be subject to any extra tax, is pretty universally accepted. It's bipartisan, you know, so it's a fascinating topic.
I love to hear that you're gaining traction in Texas, and it makes me think about how, as you mentioned, this is one of the softer ways to talk about reproductive health. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the in some of these harder states where women's health is being so suppressed, but more conservative legislators are looking for a way to reach out to women. And so maybe this is that time for period law to be able to make more headway in other states like Wisconsin. So what's happening in Wisconsin?
Exactly. That's exactly how we think about it, because it's really like it is lifting a financial burden off of families at the end of the day. Like households with many women and girls in them, like those are the people who would be feeling this savings the most. So it's not, doesn't have to be a polarizing topic at all. In Wisconsin, the 2023 budget proposal as of right now includes repealing the tax on tampons, which is huge. And like,
and again, that proposal is from Governor Evers. So that he has proposed it, he's got it in there. Now it becomes a matter of, does the Republican-led legislature leave it in or take it out?
Exactly. Well said. So I just want to encourage anyone listening to like reach out to their local representatives and just like voice their support that this stay in there. We're on the right track in Wisconsin, and this could be the year, but we just like want people to keep talking about this in their communities and saying like, this is important to us. Maybe I didn't know about it last year, but you can't really look away once you've kind of been turned on to how fundamentally unfair this is. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Kristen.
Pat and I both just opened our mouths like we both have questions that we want to ask.
You go ahead, Kristen.
So I'm not exactly sure how to ask this question. Explain to our listeners, how do you approach your legislators and talk about these sensitive issues? Because as we talked about earlier, this is hard. This is uncomfortable. So how would you recommend someone who's not as savvy about talking about reproductive health issues reach out to their legislators with that message in order to be effective?
Yeah, I love that. So, I mean, here, the message that we say when we talk to people is like a common sense message that I think like a lot of people can relate to. If you think about it, like people who menstruate on average use around 12,000 tampons or pads in a lifetime, really like broad figure, everyone's different. But so the sales tax revenue being made from those menstrual products, that means it's a lifetime economic burden that only falls on women, disproportionately falls on low income women. I mean, maybe people are thinking of times in their lives where they were like reluctant to go to work or go to school because they didn't have the products that they needed. This is a really ubiquitous problem. Obviously this disproportionately impacts low income people who are just like counting dollars and cents overall. So if you're thinking about someone you know or yourself and a time when you needed menstrual products but didn't have fast access to them, like that's the personal message that talking to your legislator about would be really brave, and it's not that easy, but it really goes a long way, especially if they haven't had that conversation before.
And share your story. Exactly. I hear you saying share your own story.
Is it exactly right? Share your story.
Well, and that's where, just because we mentioned it at the beginning, I'll come back to the pink tax as well, which again, in your case, might be more anecdotal since you work mostly on the period tax side of things, but is the pink tax, is it still a real thing? When you're at Target or whatever, you're comparing products, is it getting any better, or are women still getting taken advantage of by marketing of products directly to them?
Yeah, that's why I appreciated your differentiation at the top, because the pink tax is like kind of a term used to talk about like a bigger ideal of gender inequality, economic inequality, which like we all know a lot about. It plays into like the wage gap. If you're thinking that people are getting cents on the dollar for their work, and then they're spending more of it at the store because their razor is marked up, like all of this builds on each other. And that's what I think of as the pink tax. It's kind of this way to talk about an overarching problem. And then we have, and it is confusing, but then we have things like the tampon tax, which actually refers to like literal tax as we know it in our daily life.
All of these little things that people should know as consumers, but also as policymakers to help them treat their folks a little better. Suzanne Herman from Period Law, thank you very much. We appreciate learning so much about this today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate
and
it.
Dr. Lyerly, I say it every week, but good work out of you. You know,
I mean, the work, being able to amplify the work that Suzanne is doing is so profoundly important. So thank you, Suzanne.
And we do appreciate it. Luke Mathers has our Civic Media Homeroom coming up next. You're up north. Here's your occasional reminder that despite any youthful sound left in my voice, you're dealing with an old man who hosts this radio show and is visited by Melissa Kay from locally grown radio, WFHR. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Pat?
So nice to have you here. For today's music break, we're kicking it off with the birthday of Glenn Miller, who was born on this day in 1904. And I'm not going to tell you I'm a Glenn Miller, you know, expert by any means. I do know of a couple of the songs. And as soon as I saw Glenn Miller, though, I knew which one I wanted to play. There's just something about Moonlight Serenade. I think that's just one of the all times. It will be around long after we're gone.
Yes.
And when people who are much younger right now say, Glenn Miller, who? They are eventually going to hear that song and they're going to say, I like that. They're going to hear it at a dance or something. And it's great.
No, it's a beautiful song.
Yeah. How are things in the Rapids area these days?
Oh, you know, pretty icy, but otherwise good. Good.
I definitely understand. We've had such a mixed bag of precipitation and temperatures above and below the line that, everybody just needs to be careful. The visual from around here over the past week was a Chippewa County plow and sand truck just smashed because it got rear-ended by a semi that was going way too fast down the road.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so come on, folks. Yeah. Let's look at the history books for this day. Yellowstone was established as the world's first national park this day in 1872.
Oh, good.
Have you been?
Yes, I have driven through there. Well, I rode through there as a teenager.
I feel spoiled because we went through it once many, many years ago. But then my older daughter, you know, married a boy from that area and lived basically right next to West Yellowstone. And so we've made frequent trips into it. And you just appreciate it more each and every time. Aaron, Yellowstone, you've been, you're going to go, don't care.
I haven't been, but I'd like to.
Okay. Well,
he
good.
Cares.
We'll add that. We'll add that to the bus trip. Did you know, both of you radio kids, that the very first FM radio station went on the air this day in 1941?
No.
I mean, Aaron knew because he looked ahead on the notes.
Right.
But, you know. but yeah, station went on the air. W47NV, I mean, it just rolls right off the tongue, went on the air as the first commercial FM radio station. It later got a more traditional set of call letters, WSM-FM, and that sounds familiar, but don't confuse it. It's not the same as WSM-AM, which was and remains the radio station of, any idea? It's a Nashville radio station.
Don't know.
The Grand Ole Opry.
Oh!
So, but that early FM station lasted from 1941 to 1951, and then it folded because nobody yet appreciated FM radio, which I still find crazy. That when they had invented FM, a lot of people were like, we're good with having all the static, and you know, you can't hear if you drive next to the power lines or anything like that. And radio,
I can't believe it was only 1941. I thought it was around longer than that.
Yeah,
I can't believe it because I know I always. Anytime one of my parents would turn on AM radio for anything, I'd be like, what are you doing? This is nasty.
Right? But no, FM was all, you know, beautiful music stations, elevator music stations for the longest time. And then eventually it was classic rock station, what we would now call classic rock, but then was rock and roll stations that started to appreciate it. But they couldn't get the AM stations to bust out of their top 40 bubblegum rock habit. So they would start on FM and eventually everything came. And there is now a new WSM FM, but the original one that logged on this day in 1941 only lasted for 10 years. Hmm. Let's really go old school on the music break here. Another musical birthday, far before Glenn Miller, there was this guy named Frederick Chopin. He is the Polish pianist and composer, and this is, I don't know, what is this, Aaron? You picked out the Chopin for today.
This is Nocturne, Opus 9, Number 2. It's one of his most famous pieces. He's also well known for Clair de Lune.
Ah, yes.
Okay. Boy, we're really going back now today, folks. On this day in 1867, Nebraska was admitted as the 37th state. 1975, Blood on the Tracks by Bob Dylan topped the album chart for the first of 2 weeks. And on this day in 1998, Titanic became the first film to gross more than $1 billion worldwide. And yes, you can thank me now that I'm not again playing the Celine Dion tune from Titanic. You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. let's come up just a little bit on the music and let's play Breathe from Pink Floyd, because Dark Side of the Moon was released on this day in 1973. Now we have a very eclectic set of birthdays to share. Roger Daltrey is 79 today, lead singer of The Who. Kesha is 36. And it's Justin Bieber's birthday. How old is the Biebs today, Melissa?
I have no idea.
Oh, really? Come on, take
it. I really don't know. Justin Bieber, I don't know, 27?
29, not bad.
Hey! Yeah.
He's closing in on 30, which I... which may or may not lead to maturity and adulthood. We'll see.
I'm doubtful.
I'm not putting money on it. All right.
Don't hold your breath.
We've been listening to Pink Floyd from 73. Let's listen to Rush from 1974. Rush released their self-titled debut album in the year to come. The band secured Neil Peart as their drummer and then recorded their second album, Fly By Night. And that's pretty much the extent of it. We don't have a lot from, from the 80s, 90s, and beyond today. We did play earlier Best of My Love by the Eagles. That was the number one single on this day in 1975. And we played Kyrie by Mr. Mister, which hit number one on this day in 1986. Melissa, over at Locally Grown Radio, WFHR, what y'all been working on the past week or in the days ahead?
Oh, you know, we like to keep things fun and exciting at WFHR. This week, we have another Pet of the Week on Thursday, and I actually get to co-host with that one. Seth and I will be on the air with James in the morning. And then on Friday, Representative Scott Krug will be in for James at his morning magazine hour at 10 o'clock.
I want to hear more about these pets of the week that one can adopt. I mean, are they, I'm assuming traditional puppies and kitties.
Brought in a rabbit.
Okay. Not a Burmese python then or anything like that.
Not yet.
Okay. Especially not with the rabbit there. So.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
But yeah, they bring in pets and then we talk about them on air and help promote. It's for the South County Humane Society and promote their needs. Donations are always welcome. Kitty food. Okay. It's kitty season.
And you were going to tell us that the car market is still is still pretty hot, isn't it?
Oh, it's hot. Yeah. We decided to sell my Subaru because, you know, we bought the truck from the Porsche dealership.
Yes. Not a Porsche truck. Not a Porsche truck. Bought from a Porsche dealership, we quickly add. Yes. Okay. So you're selling the Subaru you sold the Subaru.
Sold the Subaru in 58 minutes. From the time it was posted, we were at dinner. We got home from dinner and there's a couple guys in our driveway going, yeah, we'll buy it.
Wow.
10 minutes later, I had cash in hand.
I'm not surprised. I mean, really, you could have saved time. You could have just opened up your front door and said, hey, anybody want to buy a car? You still probably would have got it in maybe 58 seconds.
And I don't think I even needed to spend the 2 hours cleaning it.
No. They would have taken it, you know, just as is. Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio. Always nice to visit with you. Enjoy the rest of your week.
You too. Thanks.
Thank you. Hey, Sarah Godlewski is coming up in our next hour. You're up north.